This is CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Chaos out there this morning. It sounds like absolute carnage. George phoned and said he's been sitting in traffic. Martin's come in, you're sweating and fuming and cursing. What happened? Like, obviously, there's a massive issue at Rivonia.
Well, there was a bumper bashing on the N1 South. Okay. Literally a bumper bashing, which meant that three lanes had to be closed. And, of course, that kept the cops busy. Yeah. So nobody was there right at the front to keep the bastards from squeezing in.
Ah, okay. All right. That's visible policing. So we go. I think that's just become the common theme. I don't know if you guys watched Carte Blanche last night, but you know, two weeks ago, we spoke about that story about this new hotline, this WhatsApp line that you can film somebody doing, you know, whatever they're doing on the road, transgressing, and then you can send it in. And Derek Watson, the guys from Carte Blanche last night, obviously went out to test it. And there's a lot of people who are umming and ahhing about it. And again, it goes down to the fact that there are no police visible on the road. I sat at a robot this morning, in the extreme left lane, and a taxi obviously created another lane next to me. There was a metro officer on the opposite side,
just looking.
I had my hand out the window, waving, going like, "What this hokey is doing?" And you know what? What happened? Nope. Nada. Nothing. So, if the metro police are on the road and they see people breaking the law, why aren't they even just whoop, you know, put the sirens on and point and say, "Hey, what you're doing is wrong. We're going to catch you," you know? But it's like,
because it's easier
to just ignore it.
To sit behind a bush and trap someone going 8 km/h an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah.
It's much easier money. It's all about money, Tom. So, it's all about money.
Yeah, geez, luck. So anyway, crazy start. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there is a new voice in the studio. Wandile is sitting in for Lawrence today. Wandile, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is definitely a different pace, a different desk that I'm used to. So
I'm
super excited.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, welcome.
Just may the odds be ever in your favor.
Exactly. Well, let's jump straight into it. We all know that, I mean, look, thank goodness, load shedding has stopped for like the last 2 weeks. But I see electric vehicles, Eskom says that even massive growth in sales of electric vehicles in South Africa won't have a major impact on the overall demand experienced during any normal day. So the public utility, again at the center of a national load shedding crisis, made the comments in a media statement confirming it, and the major players in the electric vehicle market in South Africa had met in the past few weeks. Eskom is actively involved in the EV sector as a primary electricity supplier of vehicle charging. Eskom's main objective is to craft special tariffs for electric vehicle owners to charge their vehicles at off-peak times, thereby helping to flatten the demand patterns outside peak periods. How are they going to do that? How do they know if I've plugged my car in to charge it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Maybe smart meters or something of that sort again.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like a PR stunt for me. It doesn't, you know, I don't think it has any legs. I think it's just coming back from that the story that you did last week about the poll.
Yes.
I think it's just a response to that.
To that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I mean, listen, if we cannot facilitate and keep our country lit.
I cannot keep my geyser running
for
more than an hour at a time during load shedding, how am I going to keep my car charging for 8 hours at a time?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the thing. So let's just say let's take somebody, you're a plumber, right? And they bring out an electric vehicle, Bucky. Just saying, right? Mm-hmm. Go with me here. And you get called out to an emergency, but there's been load shedding for the last 6 hours, so you haven't been able to plug your car in and charge it. There's going to be massive, massive issues. There really are. And I just don't know how they're going to fix it. So I don't quite agree with Eskom.
This is basically Eskom paying lip service again.
Yeah, exactly. Just exactly what Wandile said. What did you say? The state-owned enterprise admitted South Africa had major investments and income streams related to conventionally powered vehicles, but said international experience was showing EV manufacturing, charging stations, and battery manufacturing were creating new job opportunities and new markets. That's fantastic. But you still need electricity to you know, power those plants as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know what these oaks are taking, but it just...
We can start taking them seriously, maybe when they start allowing independent power producers to feed into the grid.
Absolutely.
When they remove all these onerous laws and regulations and things that we have at the moment.
Yeah.
As soon as those things disappear and there's an incentive for people to put up solar panels and battery packs to feed into the grid in times of high demand or low demand or recharge or just kind of stabilize the whole thing, then we can start taking them seriously. But until independent power providers, like really independent power providers, not government connected ones, real independent ones.
Like you opening some kind of charging station of some sorts because you've got mates with gazillions of dollars and you build the plant.
The moment those power producers are allowed on the grid, which they are not at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's no sign of them actually even getting a chance. Until those guys get on the grid and take some load off the grid and feed into the network, this will mean nothing.
But you know what's going to happen, though?
Some more Eskom. Yuck,
well, I agree, but you know, but the thing is, and the reason they're stopping that, because someone is going to go out there, is going to build a power plant that is absolutely probably going to take the legs out from Eskom.
Yep.
Because they're going to go and do a decent job.
So, again, follow the money. Find out who's been bribed.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Jeez, like we've had a rant this morning. Drunk drivers beware. Advanced breathalyzer launched. So, this has been announced as Transport Minister Bladen Zamani launched the Easter Road Safety Campaign in Pietermaritzburg. I think this was last week. This means that authorities would not have to wait long periods for the results of blood tests to prosecute alleged offenders. The Draeger breathalyzer test for suspected drunken drivers are back, and this time around, experts believe they have closed the legal loopholes. Long story short, what's going down here is they can literally pull your results on the side of the road and you can be prosecuted there and then. So all they need for this, there must be the arresting officer's statement. There must be the operator's statement of the breathalyzer. So what that tells me is that the officer who's arresting you is actually not allowed to implement the breathalyzer test. Thirdly, there must be a copy of the type approval certificate. Fourthly, there must be a copy of the most recent calibration certificate. Fifthly, there must be a copy of the operator certificate, and there must be also a printout of the results. That just sounds like six pieces of paperwork that can all get lost very quickly.
Oh, forged, because I was actually pulled over in a speed trap last week.
Okay.
Now, my car was not even showing 80 k's an hour, and I was pulled over for apparently doing 86. And as I asked to see, this is the calibration certificate, this guy produced predated calibration certificates stretching well into 2020.
So they produce certificates on a machine that the day hasn't even
that
come
That hasn't even been calibrated yet.
Yeah. Maybe Marty and Doc were...
Oh, I'm going to have so much fun with the MPD on this one.
I'm sure.
So I'm calling them by name, by the way. This was a Kurileni Metro.
Yeah.
They showed me a calibration certificate. What they did not realize they also showed me was a predated calibration certificate stretching into November 2020.
That's insane.
Yes. So this thing was going to have been calibrated in the beginning of 2020. Yes. And that certificate is there already. So I'm taking this up with Ikurileni PD, Metro, as well as with Truvello.
Yeah, because
so these guys have some serious legal trouble coming their way from my side.
Yes, see.
Look, I think based on this story, though, I think it's definitely like a great initiative. And South Africa has, you know, some of the highest drunk driving numbers
incidences in the world.
So I think it's definitely good. I just think there's too many steps.
In theory, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But again, it comes down to our broken legal system.
Yeah. But the thing is, if it's implemented properly, it will work. And the thing is, the guys, I think the the crux of the matter for a lot of things is, you know, it's hard in the beginning because you've got to convince a lot of people. And yes, it's laborious and there's six pieces of paperwork that you now need and it becomes an administrative nightmare. But if you do it right up front, it will become the norm.
The norm,
you'll be able to digitize this. I mean, you know, soon you'll be pulled over and the officer will have an application on his phone that will have all this paperwork there. I mean, this is what they've got to get to. I think it's a great initiative. But I mean, to your point, who's on the take? Who's paying for calibration certificates? Who's paying operators?
Exactly.
Blah, 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 blah. So, you know, I think it's really, really cool. And I don't like to sit here and poke and point, but we can only do that because that is what we experience all the time on the roads. It's ridiculous. You know, if what happened to me this morning was in London, that cop would have put his lights on and he would have found that guard there and then for breaking the law.
And
finished.
Added some points to his license. I'll take deducted some points from his license and, which I see is part of the process here as well.
Correct. So South Africa's new license demerit system is being rolled out, and here's what you need to know, right? So the Administrative Adjudication of Road Traffic Offences, ARTO, the amendment bill has been passed by Parliament and is now ready to be signed into law by the President. So speaking at the launch of the 2019 Easter Road Safety Campaign on Monday, the 8th of April, Minister of Transport Bladen Zamandi again said that his department was already preparing for the introduction of this new bill, which I think is fantastic. It's really, really good that this is all happening. But is it lip service?
Well,
or are we going to actually see
the fundamental problem with this ARTO bill.
Okay.
Our legal system is based on the principle of innocent until
proven guilty. Where this is guilty.
This is the exact opposite.
Correct.
Guilty until you can prove yourself innocent.
And yes.
Well, that's just it's wrong and it's illegal.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. You know, elections are coming up, so a lot of these stories just seem like it's time to kind of
yes.
get some votes.
Yeah, look, we're actually doing things.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was funny. I mean, you know, which is why load shedding's all of a sudden stopped.
Yep.
You know.
Food for thought.
So let's just unpack for the listeners here. So as Martin was saying, previously we had a culture of guilty as fine, but under the new regime, we need to inform South Africans that if they commit an infringement, it is not necessarily a criminal offence. Makalipi said the outlets will specifically focus on informing motorists of the following five options. If you commit an infringement, you have 32 days in which to pay the fine and receive a 50% discount. I like that. If you commit an infringement, you can always dispute it using representation to prove that there are particular circumstances behind why you infringed. So basically, if you can provide documentation that shows on the particular date that you were caught, let's just say you were caught speeding, but you were rushing your child to the hospital because you're in an emergency, you know, you'll obviously get all the reports and stuff from the hospital and you'll be able to use that as evidence to prove that you were speeding for a reason. Mm. Any infringement that exceeds 750 Rand can be paid for in installments. Nah, see how that's going to work. I wonder what the interest rates are going to be like. In the case where someone else is driving your car, you can indicate that it was not you who infringed and the fine can be rerouted to the actual infringer, and you can elect to have your infringements taken to court directly. So those are kind of the five key factors in terms of you know, how this is all going to go down.
Which just brings one further question into this equation.
Yeah.
If they can't even renew driver's licenses, how are they going to administer this?
Yeah. Again, administration. I think this is the you know. It's only going to work if the systems are properly set up and put into place and you have got a competent person sitting behind the counter dealing with this kind of stuff who can actually say, right, you need that, you need that, you need that, process it, get it all sorted out. I mean, if you go and collect I went to collect my license. When did I do my driver's? It was August last year.
Yeah.
Okay, in August I went to get my driver's license renewed. I only collected it last month.
Yeah.
And, you know, you walk in, you literally hand a piece of paper to a dude and he puts it on a table. It's just like there's no systems. It scares me that it's very kind of...
And these are the people who want to offer you a 50% discount.
Yeah. I wonder if that works. If you pay 100, they keep 50 and the other 50 goes into the system. So there's still a discount, but not for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not moan about that. But, you know, let's see what happens, all right? How's this story? A man accidentally stole a car 21 years ago and now he's searching for an owner. So long story short, what's this guy's name? This guy's name is Kevin Freeman. So Kevin Freeman, 21 years ago, was sitting in his office and he asked to borrow a co-worker's car to run a couple of errands, all right? And the month prior, it says he had struck a cow while driving and because he had totaled his car. So he wanted to go and get Slurpees for him and a co-worker. So the co-worker handed him the car key to this 1990 Ford Taurus. I don't know, Taurus.
Yeah, it was a hugely popular thing in America in the 80s and 90s.
So this guy gets the car key from his China and he walks outside. Now, his friend's car is beige and it was parked in the basement. But when he walked out the front door, there was a white one sitting in front of the building. He didn't think, because when he put the key into the door, it opened.
Because of the specific lock type.
Yes.
That Ford used at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, I mean, it's a Ford Taurus. It's to give you an analogy, it's like an Uber Corolla, Corolla Quest.
Mm.
Yeah. They all look alike.
Yes.
You cannot tell them apart. So this guy saw a Taurus and he got in and he drove off.
And he got in and he drove off. And then he actually landed up, he actually went to pay a speeding ticket or something, landed up at the cop station, and then the key wouldn't work a second time. So he got the cops to help him. He obviously returned the car and realized that he had now stolen this vehicle. And 21 years later, he now wants to come clean. So he's trying to find the owners of the white Taurus to tell them he's really sorry that he took their car to go and buy Slurpee. And
they probably thanked him because that gave them opportunity to go out and buy a Camry or an Accord.
Yeah. Quickly claim it that it had been stolen and get all the insurance and the paperwork sorted out. That's crazy.
My question here is, what's the legal implications for Kevin in this scenario? Does he...
Look, I think 21 years later, those people, they can either be douchebags and be like, well, now we're going to take you to jail. Mm. But I suppose it wasn't like he did it intentionally.
But does the law expire after 21 years? Like,
I think there's a statute of limitations. Yeah.
Okay.
Although I'm not sure.
Me
American
either.
Laws, Grand Theft Auto, because this is Grand Theft Auto. Yep. We don't know what the statute of limitations look like. But still, I found the story incredibly amusing.
Yeah, me too. So, really, really cool. Guys, this story is quite interesting, and the simple pure reason and the fact that I'm like questioning this, why Mini South Africa kills off 12 manual derivatives, including the John Cooper Works hatch. So the Mini South Africa has removed as many as 12 manual derivatives from its local range, including the manual John Cooper Works hatchback, leaving just 4 three-pedal variants in its lineup. Why would you do that, especially to a Mini? I'm sorry. I've had the pleasure of driving. I actually drove a Mini 2 weeks ago, and it's a fun car to drive, and changing gears was lekker. You know what I'm saying? Why would they do this?
People like us are in the minority. Most people these days prefer automatics, especially given the traffic conditions.
Yep.
If you spent 90% of your time sitting in bumper to bumper traffic, a clutch really becomes no fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. Listen, I mean, you know, I drive a manual.
The other thing is with the efficiency of automatic gearboxes. Over the last 20 years, it's reached incredible heights to the point where automatic cars are actually quicker and more economical than ones with manual transmissions.
Because I suppose they can program the car to change gears better than what a driver can.
Exactly.
But I think on that point that you're saying now, Martin, I think it's purely based on the fact that people are just buying automatics now.
Yeah.
Because traffic's a...
Well, traffic, and if you're in a... Not that I condone this at all, but if you're in the traffic light Grand Prix, an automatic is as simple as taking your foot off the brake and flooring it, and the car will do everything
that you need it to do.
You get repeated results, consistent results.
Yeah.
No need to concentrate. It's, let's call it fast driving for dummies.
Yeah, so the 4 surviving stick shift models are found in the hatchback range. In 1 and Cooper Gazes and 3 and 5 door body styles, meaning the Clubman, the Convertible and the Countryman lineups now feature only automatic transmissions.
And the Coupe Mini 1 and the Mini Cooper are basically the entry level cars as well. So they keep the manual transmission available to bring the entry point.
Because
the price point down.
Okay, all right. Why are automatic cars more expensive than...
Well, the gearbox is a lot more complicated. You have hydraulic pumps and extra gear sets and very fancy mechatronic units to control all these clutches and things inside.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated. So it's more expensive to manufacture, so it has to sell for more.
Okay, I get it. And then our last story quickly this morning. I see Matt LeBlanc exits. Is the Top Gear job curse? So the news of Matt LeBlanc exit from BBC's flagship motoring show Top Gear didn't come as a surprise, I think, to anybody. The American actor, best known for his role as Joey in Friends, teamed up with obviously Chris Evans when Jeremy Clarkson, James May, and Richard Hammond left, and they've obviously tried to fill the boots. But I don't think Top Gear has quite reached the levels and the standards as where the other guys were.
The problem is Clarkson, Hammond, and May.
Yeah.
They've been working together for many years.
Correct.
So they know each other, and
so the chemistry.
They literally complete each other's sentences.
Correct.
Here they had a couple of completely disparate guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
With no prior history together. And they threw them together. And one of them was an American on a British TV show.
Yeah.
And he might have been funny as a comedian, but on the show he was like dry.
It was awkward.
And the American sense of humor and the British sense of humor are very, very different. Yeah. Yeah. Very different. So
look, I'm sure he's a perfectly nice guy and he's probably a bit of a petrolhead as well. But in this setup, in this scenario, he was way out of his depth, I reckon.
Yeah, you know, actually, I followed Top Gear from, you know, when the 3 presenters were still there. And with this change, the production went up. So I think the show didn't suck. But
no, it didn't suck. The production went up, but they did that. Is that them compensating with cash?
I think exactly
versus
that.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you could have given Clarkson May. I mean, that one that they did through Africa when they went and bought those, you know, cars for like R4,000-R5,000 and drove it through Botswana. Mm. I mean, you know, there was no production to that. Only production to that was having a film crew that captured everything. I mean, it still sits in my head as one of the best hours of television that I've ever watched, because those guys, they were the show.
It was entertainment. Exactly.
They were the show. It was, you know, proper entertainment. Was exactly.
So if they stick to the same format but with completely new cast members, because let's be honest, that's what Clarkson, Hammond, and May were. They were actors.
They were actors, but I also don't think a lot of their stuff was fabricated, you know. So Jeremy Clarkson wanted to put a fish under James May's seat. That came from his heart. He wanted to piss his mate off. He was like, you know, stuff this oak. Let's see if we can really make him have a bad driving experience. And I don't think it came naturally to Evans and LeBlanc and, you know, the other guys on the show.
Also, Evans, I don't know, there's something about him that just put me off.
Well, you and half of
which
Britain
is
as
why
well.
Chris Harris slotted in.
Yeah.
And Chris Harris actually was the only one in that whole setup with a little bit of charisma as well as some knowledge about cars.
Yeah. Even with him and Rory, the interactions between the two of them was much better than with Matt.
Yeah.
Matt was just kind of like the black sheep.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Did you just say black sheep?
I did. That was,
All right, guys, let's get into F1. So there was the Chinese Grand Prix this weekend.
Grand Prix,
and Wandile happens to be a bit of a F1 nut. So
well, that's good because I didn't have a chance to watch.
I caught the start. I caught the first couple of laps. I watched the accident and then, you know, I had to wash my dog. And so tell us, Andelia, what went down this weekend in the Grand Prix?
It was quite interesting. You know, this season, I think, has came with a huge shift in just how F1 is. So there's lots of mid-table battles that we really got to see now in China with the long straights and the two really long DRS zones. So it was great to see the guys in the middle really, you know, showing the older guys and the bigger teams that, you know, we're here to play as well.
Yes.
I think one big thing is Pierre Gasly at Red Bull now is finally showing that he's not just a one-hit wonder, but he's actually here to play. And he's not going to just let Max, you know, run the team.
Yeah.
But once again, Mercedes just did, you know, do what they
did
best.
They did the right job,
They've really fixed that car up. It's not shaking as much as it was. The chassis is a lot more stiffer and more... I guess it's just performing the way they wanted to.
Yeah.
It was a shame to see Bottas not, you know, go from pole position to win.
Yeah.
But I think for the team, they did a great job. But Ferrari's still there. I think that it's a long season.
So what was it? Mercedes-Benz 1 and 2 and Ferrari 3 and 4?
No, Ferrari 3rd and then Verstappen in the Red Bull in 4th and then Leclerc in the Ferrari in 5th. And that was apparently because of team orders. Is that true?
7th lap. Charles takes Vettel, but prior to the race, the team principal of Ferrari did say that Vettel gets priority, just because of his experience at this point.
Yeah.
So they just made they decided to make the switch. I think it was the right decision because he just wasn't there. Charles was not there this race. I think the headspace was just not there.
Not there.
Yeah. You know? And look, he did come in and he came in third at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. He did the job.
Well, Vettel. Yeah.
So do you think that was a bad call if the team still got the points they wanted? I'll leave it to you.
I don't actually know.
I don't know either. So,
But to be told in this, what, the seventh lap to pull over and let your teammate pass.
It's a hard call.
Yeah, I mean, let it go a little bit. But then, I can't.
They're 57 points behind Mercedes. Are you really going to, you know, like risk it?
I'm not going to have them fighting each other.
Yeah.
He doesn't get more points, though, surely.
No, but Ferrari gets more points the higher they finish up.
Mm.
So they were chasing points.
Yeah.
And they said, apparently, well, from what I understand now, they reckoned they had the best chance of scoring more points for Ferrari with Vettel in front.
Okay. All right. So all in all, a good Grand Prix. Were there any other incidences, any other accidents, crashes?
Yeah, in the first lap, there was both McLarens were involved in incidents with one of the Toro Rossos, the baby Red Bull team.
Yeah.
Carlos Sainz was actually the car involved, and he was extremely angry at Danny Kvyat from Toro Rosso. I think it's the first lap, it was the first corner. It's
quite tight. I mean, it's
extremely tight.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it was a mistake. I don't think there was anything that was intentional.
Yes.
And it was a bit of a shame to see the McLarens, you know, suffer that so early in the race. But it's racing. Right?
It is racing. Absolutely.
The result that stands out for me is Albon.
Yeah.
Started the race 20th. From the pit lane, and ends up in 10th overall.
Place. Started at the bottom, now I'm here.
Yeah. What a drive!
Yeah, sure.
And he came from F2, so this is his first season.
Sure.
Yes.
And actually crashed his car in qualifiers. In practice, he couldn't even do qualifiers. And he goes and he shows everyone that, hey...
Yeah, they can do that.
Start from the pit lane and then do that.
These young guys, their headspace is just...
Yeah, that's so impressive.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
So impressive. They're here to really play.
Yeah.
Not here to just...
Well, that's good. That's good. And let's just hope it stays like that and it carries on being exciting. No, you were bouncing around last week, dancing in the office and stuff. Apparently, there's a racing team coming to South Africa. What's going down there? Tell us what's happening.
Finally, you know, it's been many years since F1 was you know... They come and go, but finally Red Bull's bringing an F1 car to South Africa.
Okay.
It's going to be in Cape Town on the 2nd of June for the Red Bull, I guess it's like a parade.
Yes.
I guess everyone gets to really see and hear an F1 car.
Red Bull Cape Town circuit.
So South Africans will finally get to see the Formula One in their backyard when multiple world champion winning team Aston Martin Red Bull Racing brings speed, sound, and maybe a couple of donuts to Cape Town streets in June. Mm. Who's bringing them out here? I'm sure, who was it?
That would probably be Red Bull.
Is it David? It's coming, it's actually Red Bull bringing their own car. Actually a championship winning car.
Yeah.
From 2007, if I'm not mistaken.
All right.
And I think what's great is that it's completely free.
And they're just going to go and rip up the streets in Cape Town and you can go down and watch. That's going to be amazing. I mean, I still remember they did that in Sandton once. I don't think they were cool. Were those F1?
Yeah.
They were F1 cars.
The noise. Yeah. But those were still proper F1 cars as well. Like proper engines, not these bloody hybrids. And I can say that because George is listening, but he's not here.
Correct, exactly.
it's going to be insane. I can't wait.
I see they've been in Vietnam. They've been in France, Belfast, and on top of the roof of a skyscraper in Miami.
Holy moly.
So it looks like this is a roadshow.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why. Why are they coming to Joburg? I mean, think, listen, Cape Town's pretty. I get it.
I think I need to put in some leave for Cape Town.
Yeah, that would be something I'd do to go and see and hear and experience.
Yeah.
Sure. Definitely. Fantastic. And then just quickly, because we don't have too much time on this now, but Mike Briggs, Dion Joubert and Sean Watson-Smith set to electrify race fans at the Jaguar Samola Hill Climb. These three guys are going to be out here and they're all going to be riding the E-Paces.
I-Pace.
Yeah. So they're going to tackle the 1.9 Samola Hill in near silence. They're all electric in the electric Jaguar I-Pace.
All you'll hear will be tire squeal.
That's it. So, and that's from the 3rd to the 5th of May. So that's around the corner. I've actually never been to one of those. Have you been to one?
No. So if any manufacturer is going down, we really need some complimentary tickets here because we can't afford to go on our own.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nissan, Jaguar, if anyone's listening, we really like to see this.
Absolutely. And then we'll talk about it.
And then we'll talk about it as well.
Correct. Fantastic. So, yeah, so that's going down in May, 3rd to the 5th of May. Right, gentlemen, week before Thursday.
Yeah.
Yes. What a phenomenal evening where Mercedes-Benz scooped the title at the 2019 Auto Trader South African Car of the Year Awards. And what an evening it was.
I just want to say, look, I had no idea what was going down. I just had like these vague concepts from a word heard here and a word heard there.
Yep.
But arriving at their venue, the way the organizers at Auto Trader set out this whole thing was spectacular. And the graphic designs and the presentation.
Amazing.
Oh, what an event, man.
It was a show.
It was a show. It wasn't just a prize-giving ceremony. It was a proper show.
Yeah. So, look, obviously...
I kept looking around for drones.
We actually saw some of the drone footage. I saw some of the drone footage last week. Yeah, no, we had drones there filming it all. So, if you weren't there, just to give you a lowdown of what went down, we pretty much took everybody to the Huddle Golf Course, which was that's the only venue people knew, and that's what they thought was, you know, where the event was going to be. And no disrespect to the Huddle Golf Course, but we were in the bar and, you know, guys were just chatting and mingling and stuff. And then we pretty much had shuttles and we shuttled everybody off to a beautiful venue in Johannesburg and
Shepstone Gardens.
We had really kitted Shepstone Gardens out. We had turned it into this jungle wonderland. Like George likes to say, it was almost Jumanji meets Tron.
Yes.
And you had this whole jungle, but you had the tech behind it as well. And Mercedes-Benz took the top scoop there. So, congratulations to Mercedes-Benz. Porsche came second.
Our overall winner of Car of the Year is the Mercedes-Benz A-Class.
Yep.
The first runner-up, so second place, is the Porsche Cayenne.
Correct.
And the third place was the Volvo XC40, which is interesting because that car did not finish anywhere near the top or at the top of its category.
Sure.
Because it competed against the Cayenne. Yeah. And that just shows you exactly how good all these SUVs actually were.
Absolutely. I think there were a lot of people who thought the Porsche was going to take it again.
Yeah.
And obviously Mercedes-Benz landed up taking it, but it was a phenomenal event. And I just think from us, you know, to the guild, to everybody that was involved, even from behind the scenes, to the jurors, to the guild, to the OEMs who participate. I just hope that we can now
expand.
We want to expand.
Yes.
We want Coty to be what Coty is. And what we did 2 weeks ago was the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
I have much bigger visions and plans for this event.
The time frame. I mean, we started talking about Coty last year, September.
Yeah. Mm. No, it was done very, very quickly.
And to put all of this together, including a complete revamp of the competition itself.
Correct. Yeah.
And the testing.
Introduction
and
of categories. Yes. Introduction of the consumer's vote.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of
completely
new dynamics.
Completely new website with public participation, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Massive social media campaign.
Huge.
Now, look, I'm impressed, and I mean, I'm part of the team, and I'm impressed.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it was really, really good. So, just thank you to everybody that that was involved in that. And, you know, again, hats off to George for being the CEO with the vision to say, you know what, that's an award that we want to get behind. And, you know, we've we've kind of put our hands up and said, you know what, this is the premium motor car awards show in the country. It's been the longest standing, and it deserves its place at the top, and that's exactly where it's going to stay. So, so well done to everybody with that.
Quick roundup of the categories.
Yeah, give us the categories and
premium
give us the winners.
Premium sedan category winner, Lexus ES.
Yes.
Leisure SUV or crossover category winner, Porsche Cayenne. With Volvo, obviously, in that category, just a little bit behind it.
Yep.
Lifestyle utility category winner, which was, I think Suzuki's probably still hungover.
There was the Jimny. Lovely little car.
Right. And then another Suzuki, urban compact category winner, the new Swift.
Yep.
And then medium family sedan or hatch category, it's the Mercedes A-Class, which then turned out to be the overall winner as well.
Yep, fantastic.
So congratulations to everyone. As some of the other contenders there told me there at the prize giving or at the announcement, it's actually nice to be there. It's nice just to be there. They feel it's actually an honor just to be in the list of the finalists and be there.
Yeah.
So thanks for this as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that you can say you went up and you competed again, and look, we know how this works, that you compete in your category.
Yeah.
But the fact that you were there and present and involved is kudos to the OEMs for the beautiful pieces of machinery that they are building and manufacturing now.
Well done for Suzuki, and I hope everybody markets the living daylights out of this, because I think it's 58 million rands worth of marketing value.
Yeah, well, I mean, we haven't quite pinned that number down, but it's definitely in that region.
It's a huge amount of money. And if they use their titles and their category wins properly, I think Suzuki will not just be more than 1,000 sales by the end of this year. They should be edging closer to 2,000.
Yeah, well, we hope that. I think at the end of the day, you want us to translate into, you know, and the only way you can exactly one dealer into sales, and that's customers voting with their wallet, and that's what counts.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Fantastic. So, well done to everybody. Coty 2019 was definitely a success, and watch this space. Fantastic. First drive. Stark raving mad for Toyota's updated crossover. What are we talking about here? What's going down?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there?
No.
So this Fasano drove this vehicle. I don't know if you've driven it, if you've seen it, if you know much about it.
No. Well, I know the basic platform because it's also under the new Corolla, and it's also under the Lexus ES, and it's also under the Toyota CHR.
Okay, so this is Toyota's compact crossover, right?
Yeah. Now, remember, back in the early 90s or mid-90s, that was the category that Toyota actually created with the original RAV4.
Yes, okay.
And it's almost been a complete sales success ever since. The first two generations sold very well. The third generation was a bit of a dud, not because it was a bad car. I think the product mix just wasn't entirely appropriate yet. And then the last generation picked it up in a big way. And now the new one seems set to continue with this.
Okay. And I mean, it does. It looks like an absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it's a nice looking car.
Yeah.
I haven't had the pleasure of driving.
What I noticed from the press pics, they have different, let's call it different faces for the different derivatives. So you can get one with this kind of grille, and then you can get one with that kind of grille.
Okay.
So for the first time, you can get, let's call it tailor-made RAV4s.
Yeah.
I think that actually does impress me very much. Entry-level pricing.
Yes, 416,400.
Yeah, that's pretty good value.
For a RAV4 2-litre.
Yeah.
GXMT two-wheel drive.
Yeah, manual front-wheel drive, entry-level. It obviously doesn't. It won't come with all the bells and whistles and all the nice things. So for that, you'll have to probably look at a VX spec.
Yeah.
Which tops out at 578,000.
Sure.
Which is a lot of money, but then again, it's a new 2.5, and that one will come with everything
you need.
Clicks and bangs and whip and tinkles.
So that article is Fasana's review is on our website, autotrader.co.za, under the news and review section, and you can go and read all about the new RAV4 lineup.
The one I'd actually really like to talk about was car I drove 2 weeks ago as well.
Which was that?
new Mitsubishi Triton.
Oh, and how was that?
That, if ever there's a prize in any competition for the most improved product, that would probably be it. The basic center structure of the thing is still the same, so it's the same or similar chassis, and it's the same cabin.
Okay.
But they restyled it to the point where it looks like a completely different vehicle. Now, the old one was all rounded curves, and it looked a bit soft.
Yeah.
This new one is intimidating as hell. It's probably not pretty or beautiful, but it finally has some character of its own. It still has a great engine and the best four-wheel drive system of the lot.
Yeah.
And for top spec one, you will end up paying a good 50 or 60,000 rand less than you'd pay for the equivalent Hilux or Ranger.
So how does it compare to like a Hilux or a Ranger?
It's actually more than competitive. Look, I haven't driven the latest Ranger, which launched last week with a new 2-liter turbo diesel. But compared to the Hilux, it is pretty much better by every measurable aspect. More cabin space, more comfortable accommodation inside the cabin, more power, similar torque, better fuel consumption, better gearbox. Well, it's more than competitive with the Hilux, and I reckon it will probably be competitive or more than competitive with the Ranger as well.
Now, is that built off the same platform as the new Pajero Sport?
Yes.
Okay.
So this relates to the Pajero Sport the way that the Hilux relates to the Fortuna. So it's the Bucky version with the leaf springs.
Correct.
Things that really impressed me, the noise and vibration and harshness levels. It's almost as quiet as a limo inside at freeway speeds in spite of off-road tires.
Sure.
Gearbox, you know when a gearbox is a great unit? When it does its job without you noticing that it's there.
Yes.
So it's completely unobtrusive. It's always in the power.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then I looked at the fuel consumption as well. That's a Bucky that can realistically give you better than 9 liters per 100 kilometers.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, geez, like if you are going to be in a Bucky, that's where you want to be playing.
I really hope they start selling more than 46 units a month with this new facelift.
Well, I mean, you know, you say that. I mean, look, I think, you know,
they
South Africans
sell
are steeped 1/100th in...
1/100th of... of Hilux sales volumes,
but do you think that's just been a marketing thing, and Toyota's just being, you know,
well, Toyota's been there forever, but also Toyota has a much wider range. Mitsubishi only caters for the upper end.
Yes, okay.
Do you think these changes will make that sort of tipping order change? Do you think?
I think it should, because going on all the plastic clad Rangers and Hiluxes we see, aggressive styling is a big selling point now. And as far as off the shelf aggressive styling goes, this new Triton is right up there.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, that's really, really good. So, you know, I wish them all the best. I mean, Mitsubishi, I mean, you know, I do actually drive one. I drive an ASX, and I cannot tell you that car has impressed me. It's just a good car. It really is. It's solid, you know. So well done to Mitsubishi. Right, gentlemen, last story for the morning, and this is quite a cool one, but I see that the British automaker Jaguar last week started to develop the second phase of its materials repurposement program. In this case, old Jags will be provided materials to build new ones. So essentially what these guys are doing is they're getting old Jaguars, they're stripping them down, they're taking all the parts that can still be used. The aluminium, what they're doing is they're obviously melting it down, they're smelting it, and they're actually now manufacturing new Jags from old Jags.
So here's a fun fact for you, and this is why they're doing it, and why they're capable of doing this cost effectively.
Yeah.
Aluminium costs about 3 times as much as steel to make in the beginning.
Yes.
But the recycling cost, every time you recycle it, you end up with a higher quality product.
Yeah.
And it costs a lot less to recycle than steel does.
Yeah. So the only question I ask is, are Jaguar's prices going to come down when you buy a recycled manufactured?
Probably not, but they might be able to start showing a profit for once.
Well, this is the thing. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I think that's really, really cool, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty other OEMs who are going to jump on the bandwagon, and it just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do.
You know,
it's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to
do. Aluminium is a more intelligent construction material for cars.
Yeah.
But because that initial refinement cost is so high, many manufacturers shy away from it. climate and because it demands high-tech assembly methods. Mm. But Jaguar's got that all sorted now.
Yeah.
And now because the cars, most of their cars, most of the new cars launched since, 2014,
okay,
have been mostly aluminium.
Yeah.
Mm.
So those things are now reaching the end of the European life cycle, mm-hmm, and those cars will be recycled now.
Yeah.
And now it's going to cost them less and less and less and less on materials to get higher quality materials every time.
Yeah, I wonder how much they pay for that recycled vehicle. Like, do you take your car back to the dealership and the guy will say, well, do you want to trade it in or do you want to recycle it?
I don't think you get the option to recycle it yourself.
Yeah, probably not.
It goes to a dealership and then it follows different channels.
Yeah.
If the car is in a specific condition, it will still pass its,
yes,
its road. Well,
I suppose at the end of the day,
you've
got to get their car bought back from you so that you can go and buy a new one anyway. Yes. So yeah, I suppose that's what's going
to
happen.
It doesn't really make a difference to the end user. Yeah.
No.
I think it'll be interesting to see if like other OEMs, you know, start doing this as well.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
In the 90s, BMW, Audi and Mercedes already started big recycling plants to take their old cars and, well, crush them and grind them and turn the plastics into pellets and sort and separate everything. And some of those cars ended up being more than 80% recyclable back then already.
Yes, what a pleasure.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. And I think that's a great note to end the show on.
Fantastic.
So, gentlemen, thanks very much for joining me today. Wandile, well done, Chana. It was really good. Nice to have you.
This was fun.
Yeah, it's really, really cool, man.
Nice to have you on the show.
Mart, thanks very much. George, I hope you're still not sitting in traffic. And on that note, that's another Auto Central. Guys, check out our news and reviews, autotrader.co.za, your trusted motoring marketplace. And if you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle,
or a trailer, or a commercial vehicle,
or a boat,
tractor,
I mean, we
or
can
a
go
boat,
on for days, exactly. So anyway, and yeah, guys, have a good week, and Easter weekend next weekend. Please be safe on the roads. Don't drive like a chop, and we'll catch you.
Ideally, if you can, stay off the roads.
Stay off the roads.
All together.
Yep.
Have a good week, people. Bye-bye.
Keep up.
This is CliffCentral.com.